Hello everybody and welcome to the next recording of the Three Academicos podcast.
Our next topic is about AI in education, right? So the question I want to pose is, does the recent kind of development in AI mean the end of assessment by a coursework, and what are the alternatives, right? So to just kind of set the kind of scene here, right? Increasingly, students seem to be turning to tools such as ChatGPT and similar to help or even to fully create their coursework submissions. And the availability of AI detection tools seems to be kind of very limited, right? And just to kind of put this together as well, an education summit held by Stanford University in 2023 stated by asserting that by the start of the summit on February the 15th, 2023, ChatGPT had reached more than 100 million unique users, and they were estimating 30% of all college students had used it for assignments, making it one of the fastest ever applications ever adopted overall, and certainly in education settings. Within the education world, teachers and school districts have been wrestling with how to respond to this emerging technology. So, Catherine, what do you think? Do you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, so like AI is a really interesting one, and I think about maybe this time last year or even maybe 18 months ago with ChatGPT, we did see some influxes, and it sort of raised the question, you know, where's education going to go with this? We're doomed, we're not going to have jobs and so on. But after that little flurry, it seemed to disappear again, and I'm not really so aware of people using it. I think, I mean, AI doesn't fit with me at all. So I'm, as you know, Doug, I'm not even one to use a tool to gather my references, you know, to rewrite my references for me and to do that format. And being able to write and articulate an argument is a very important skill to have, and you know, from the perspective of students, that they need to be able to demonstrate that. So, now at this point, I feel satisfied with where AI is, and that the fact that students don't seem to be delving into it like I anticipated that they would.
Or is it just that we don't know that they're delving?
No, because we know well enough, you know. We can tell quickly if a student has used AI to generate, because you know when to talk to a student. You know, the verbal communication will be represented in the written communication. And so if they don't communicate well verbally, they can't do it in written. And if it is done well, then they've got somebody else to do it for them, or AI or whatever it is.
Absolutely. And Kepi, do you have a view on this?
Yeah, it's, like I say, it's a very interesting one, actually. And I know there's been a lot of talk for them to stop. I think that made me laugh, actually. Stop developing a generative AI because, you know, things are moving too quickly. And I thought, yeah, that's going to be tough and nobody's going to listen to that, which has been the case. So I think education catching up with where things are at is an interesting one. A lot of my colleagues have likened it to the calculator coming out and them saying, you know, can't touch this and do your calculations by hand. And we eventually merged it into education. Everybody uses it now, but you know, at the end of the day, it's rubbish in, rubbish out. And it's the same thing with Gen AI at the end of the day. Yeah. So I think it's, for me, it's still a tool. And I think the main thing is trying to get students to understand how to use the tool and not think of it, again, like the calculator. You just punch numbers in and whatever it gives you is the right answer. No, that's not necessarily the case. You're probably not experienced enough to be able to review those answers and think that doesn't make sense. Actually, that's incorrect. Or actually, that needs to be expanded a bit more. So they still need, so we're not out of jobs. I don't think we are. I don't think we've got to that point. We still need that human touch to be able to help students review, revise, and understand. And like you said, get that critical understanding that is needed to be able to write properly and assess properly, basically. That's not going to go away. Gen AI is not there yet. But it can be a useful tool for a lot of students. I think people especially who have learning difficulties or disabilities can be helpful to them, to help them in summarizing and drawing out some key facts. But at the end of the day, if it's an assessment, it has to be their own words. And like you said, Catherine, if they're Verbal assessment is not very good, and the written one can't be, excellent really. There has to be a reason for the disparity. So I think we're at a point where it is a tool, and it's knowing understanding how to use that tool rather than thinking it's just going to be for plagiarism every time, not necessarily.
No, I think it's a good point, and I think that there's some that paper I mentioned from Stanford is a useful one to kind of look at, because I think there were some interesting things that came out of that about how we the positive uses of kind of AI and kind of education. And I think, as you say, maybe it just needs us to maybe kind of look at coursework or what we use for kind of coursework. The interesting thing is that one of the places I teach, again, I won't mention the name, but has been having real problems with kind of AI kind of generated kind of scripts or whatever. But again, as Catherine said, is it the fact that it's AI generated, or is it the fact that we're getting false positives off these kind of tools that they use? So yeah, I think as you mentioned, there's a bit of a Luddite coming out. There's a bit of the going back to, oh, calculators are going to destroy math learning or whatever. But yeah. So yeah, I think there is that, and I think it always happens that you get that initial kind of kickback, and then things kind of settle down.
Yeah, that's right.
But you
Yeah,
think? Go on, Catherine. Sorry.
I think I just gonna say, whenever we're talking about learning how to use the tool, like you would have a lot more control over children in school learning to use a calculator, than we would have an online education.
That's true.
And especially where we have students that don't interact with us, because if we say that real time engagement or real time participation is not essential because we recognize you're busy and you want to study around that, so we don't have a lot of interaction perhaps with a student, it becomes very hard then for us to identify in the sort of uncontrolled environment, let's say,
Yeah.
the use of the AI tool.
And I think, like you say, that makes a really good point for that trying to encourage that kind of that face-to-face engagement at some point and at some level, basically. I agree. It's this thing about trying to learn completely offline by just using pre-recorded videos and just reading PDFs is it's okay for maybe the top 5% who can just read stuff and learn. But I think for most students, the kind of interaction, and not just interaction with us as educators, but interaction with a community of learning is an important part of the learning process, I think, basically, yeah. I just wanted to kind of add in, so there's a paper by a guy called Hicks et al. From 2024, and the paper's called ChatGPT is BS. It doesn't say BS, it says an expanded. That's the expanded version, but I'm just for the more kind of and the more delicate ears, I'm just going to call it BS during this kind of chat, basically, right? And basically, in this paper, he claims that ChatGPT and some of the applications, right? He claims that the application of these systems have been plagued by persistent inaccuracies in their output, and these inaccuracies are often referred to as AI hallucinations. Kind of sounds a bit of a somebody trying to kind of soften the blow, right? And he also says the models are an important way indifferent to the truth of their output, right? And so, because what he's saying is, at the end of the day, these things are mathematical models, right? And although at one level math is about truth, right? And another level, from what we might understand as truth, a mathematical model can't decide whether something is true or not. All it can do is use the weightings or the statistics, whatever you've given it, to decide what is the most likely output. Now, that may
Input.
not be the best or even the true output. It may just be the most likely kind of output, right? And basically, they maintain that what these AI programs produce and the intention behind their production is BS, in a sense that the main purpose of the application is to give the impression they are accurately representing the state of the world, or at least a part under investigation, right? And they also maintain that not only do these applications exhibit a lack of concern for the truth, but there is some evidence that in some cases they make an active attempt to deceive the reader or listener. And there have been examples of there was an example in The Guardian of some guy was trying to find a quote from Proust, and he couldn't find it, and he tried to use ChatGPT, and he got into an extended conversation, and he found out that literally what was happening was that the more he queried the ChatGPT agent, engine, whatever you want to call it, the more it kind of tried to double down on what it was doing, even though it was becoming increasingly obvious that what it was doing was presenting a summarized version of Proust, and that it didn't actually know where all of these kind of quotes or whatever were actually kind of coming from, right? So, but rather than admitting I'm not quite sure where it comes from, they were kind of sitting there going, "Oh, well, no, well, it might come from here," and it was almost like you're having a conversation with like, a student who hasn't done his work, who hasn't done his preparation, and is trying to kind of convince you that really he does know or she does know what they're talking about after all, basically. I mean, does that resonate with either of you guys? That kind of a
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think I had the first-hand experience of hallucinations when I tried to get information papers on this particular topic, and I thought, oh, instead of trawling around Google Scholar and the rest of it, let me just try this GenAI ChatGPT thing and they see what it brings up. I can't remember the topic now. I asked for it. I did the whole, wording everything to make sure that it could find exactly what I wanted, and I brought up this list of references, and I thought, oh, okay, good. I just copied them down. The next day, I was trying to use them for something, or at least trying to check one of them, and couldn't find the paper. And I thought, okay, that was a bit random. I'll check the next one. I had a list of 10, and none of them existed. In fact, some of the journals didn't even exist. Forget the paper. And I
And
thought to myself, how did he come up with this? This is ridiculous.
that is a well noted. I mean, it might be getting better now, but that is a well documented kind of problem that they do tend to make up references
Yeah,
sometimes.
but it just ties in with the fact that it doesn't know truth from it. Just thinks of a probability. Well, such a topic would have been written by such a person in such a journal called this at such a time, and therefore I will bring up this result. And it's like that is not truth. That's not fact. That's just hallucination. I think it's a very nice way of putting it.
Yeah, well, I say it's a way of trying to soften the fact that these things are possibly not that dependable at the moment, basically. Catherine, any views from your side?
No, I mean I haven't actually used it before.
But it's quite good that you haven't really. But unfortunately, if we could get more of our students, maybe not. I think as Stanford said, I think there was a lot of useful things. So if you can get students to the right kind of level, I think they could use ChatGPT to do some really interesting kind of learning. But at the moment, what they are is at that kind of almost laziness level of basically saying, let's try and get this to do my work for me, rather than let's try and get this to kind of complement what I'm doing by providing me with evidence or providing with models that I can kind of test and exercise, basically. Yeah. So that actually brings me on quite nicely to our next topic. So our next topic is about education versus certification. So this is a big one, I guess, especially for kind of industry, right? Some kind of companies will always kind of say that, oh, they want industry certifications from people, right? Rather than kind of education, right? So what is the difference between certification and education? So just to kind of kick us off, one way to look at this is the difference is through the lens of Bloom's taxonomy. Okay, so if you recall, obviously both of you being fellows of HEA, so you know these things off the top of your head, right? So if you recall, like, right, Bloom's taxonomy basically is about, and I'm going to kind of summarize here, so forgive me if I oversimplify, right? But effectively, Bloom's taxonomy is about learning outcomes driving the type of assessment and the level of understanding. So the idea being that you start off with kind of rote learning, and then kind of being able to add on to that, and then you've got kind of evaluation and synthesis, and then ultimately at the top, right, you've got kind of creativity, basically, right? So one view I want to kind of present here, right, is because most industry certifications, tests, stroke tools are based on multiple choice online assessments. Could it be argued that education is more flexible and can be aimed at the higher levels of understanding, such as creativity and synthesis, because because a lot of the times good education is there with kind of tutors and you've got live interaction one to one, and therefore we can actually allow students to have far more involved or far more nuanced kind of assessments rather than kind of just online multiple choice tests. So, and Kepi, do you want to kick off on that one?
Yeah, I totally agree. This is quite an interesting topic actually, and especially in a field like cybersecurity, where certification tends to carry the bigger onus on people, really. That's what employers seem to be looking for, to see how what certifications you have. I still believe that education, it should be on a higher level, because at the end of the day, like you said, it gives you that ability to go deeper, to get to the point where you can create by the time you actually leave the education. Whereas with the certifications, you're just seeing how much people remember and just ticking off boxes, really. It doesn't give you that depth of knowledge. So I guess unless the employer is willing to just take the fact that, okay, the person has that base knowledge, we're going to build on it whilst they're in the company. But education gives you that room to make mistakes and to create and develop. And before you go out into the company, hopefully you're then in the position where you can confidently pick any tool up and run with it, really. So I'm very much for the education piece, with certification just being an add-on where possible into a degree, really.
Okay, that's cool. Thank you. Catherine, have you got any views on this?
Yeah, so like just to contextualize what this means. So it'll be like getting education would be getting your, let's say your master's science degree, and then your certification would be getting like a Cisco qualification,
Correct, yes.
or anything equivalent to that. So I think I would agree with Nkepi as well. So the education first and then the certification. But I think, that might be because, the education is more supported, let's say, where certification is you have to be your own supporter and your own driver. And for us, I think sometimes our students can be mature students who have been out of learning for a period, and that support back into education then gives them the confidence to go on and do the certification. So, that we, well, I do, I would often add, my students would often add me on LinkedIn, just to connect once they leave the education experience. And then it's not uncommon to see all the students getting their certification. And I think especially true in the students who are mature, the fact that they come back later in life shows that they are these lifetime learners. And there's only so many master's degrees you can pay for. And then, you get your certification and you go on into these specialized jobs that pay enough money to pay back those loans that you took out earlier on. So I can't see really how you would go into certification without having that education, because the thing is as well, the standard required for certification is generally, I would say, higher than education in those
Or
specialized.
more specific, at least. So maybe they need more kind of specific. I mean, just to kind of plug Illumilearn here for a second, the academy, with our qualification, with our diploma, is we're designing it to kind of map onto a lot of the kind of certification programs. So the idea is we cover the same kind of areas. So I think, as Kathy was saying, you get the best of both worlds. You get that idea of kind of the education, where we try and nurture you into kind of learning and understanding these things, but we also set you on the path of having that kind of knowledge, or at least knowing where to get the knowledge, so you can go and get your certification kind of later. And I do tend to agree. I do tend to agree that the certification is a very much kind of an industry thing, and I'm very much, because I mean, some of these certification programs cost a fortune. I mean, literally just to go and sit in front of a computer and do a test, you could be paying several hundred pounds. For just like, maybe a couple of hours in front of a computer, right? And I'm very much of the view that if you go to an employer and he wants you to have that certification, I think it's down to him or her, or effectively the company, to pay you to go through that certification route. Yeah. So I think education is something for you for yourself, but I think certification is something for the employer, because a lot of the times they are selling your ability, they're selling your knowledge as part of the company. So therefore, I think, it's
It
up to
benefits
them.
them
Yeah,
quite a lot as
it
much
is,
as it would
absolutely.
benefit
Yeah,
you.
absolutely. So you could argue that education benefits you more than the company, whereas certification benefits the company more than it benefits you. Because a lot of these certification things, because the arm industry, they tend to be, you have to sit the exam every couple of years or whatever, basically. So
Exactly, yeah.
it's a way of generating money. And if you've got to pay for that yourself, it suddenly becomes quite onerous. Okay, thank you very much for that. And I think I do think it's a good way of looking at those. So our final topic for today is about and this is interesting because this is coming back to certainly what you mentioned and what Cathy mentioned as well. And it's a difference between further and higher education, right? Which level is required for the best career in industry? Now, on one level, obviously, we can look at the differences in terms of Bloom's taxonomy, which we just talked about, right? The fact, Bloom's taxonomy would kind of say that, kind of a master's level needs to exhibit that kind of higher level of taxonomy than something like further education or whatever, basically, right? However, is this sufficient? Is this sufficient to kind of describe the difference, right? And where do conversion degrees fit into this kind of model? Because the idea of Bloom's model, Bloom's taxonomy, is the fact that you learn your stuff by rote first, and then you build on that as you kind of move up the levels, for want of a better word. How does that work with a conversion degree where you don't have those lower levels and you're trying to jump in at those kind of higher levels of the tree, basically, yeah. So, Catherine, do you want to start us on this? What was your view about that, that kind of a difference between further and higher education?
Well, I think because of the world we live in, and possibly coming back to these Mickey Mouse degrees, is that I don't want to say it's undervalued what a degree is, but let's say everybody has a degree. There's so many people with degrees now, and so the initial benchmark for a job specification could ha have to be higher education now, because to get to the position of interviewing or assessing if somebody's suitable, they need to have the higher education degree. And then that's when the job applications come in and you find out that they're in game play and learning accordion and those types of things. So it becomes very heavy, a job heavy task then for employers to begin filtering out.
And again, and this goes back to AI, right? So this goes back to the fact that if you and a lot of these agents use this, right? If you're using an AI program to filter out, and you just say check for degree, then what it's going to do is going to let these people through because they've got a
Exactly.
degree. Even if, as you say, when you look at the degree in detail, you find out it's a degree in kind of embroidery and accordions or whatever, basically, right? So yeah, definitely, yeah.
But the further education qualifications, and it goes back to the previous question again about the certification, it's that somebody might have a specific interest in, let's say, car mechanics, and they're getting the skills that they need at a time when they need to learn it, as opposed to going through this whole education package where, relating back to what we said as well about the transferable skills. So maybe with a further education qualification, we can say that, and I'm not saying, but possibly they're not getting the transferable skills, but they're getting very subject specific skills that will take them directly into a job.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, I think. So, and Kepi, what's
Yeah,
your
no, I
view on
agree
this?
on that point actually, that they are getting those subject specific skills for a particular industry. So it's very much zoned in or a narrow pathway into a specific role, whereas a HE degree would actually give you a wider remit really in terms of going, because you've got those transferable skills, so you can go into any industry and work anywhere. But that being said, though, I think HE is now trying to get the best of both worlds because now we've got degree apprenticeships,
Yes.
so they do see the benefit of having that zoned in view really of a particular course for a particular industry if people know that's exactly where they want to go. So trying to give the best of both worlds and making it a degree apprenticeship is another factor that universities have brought in. So and plugging in our course again, really in this one, it's just the fact that yes, people have that interest and maybe want to go into cybersecurity or another creative fields. But at the end of the day, we're still making it such a way that they've got those transferable skills to be able to go into something else as well, wherever it
And
leads
like you
them.
say, the fact is that the difference between a certification and a diploma or whatever is the fact that the diploma has that kind of academic credit for want of a better word, which means that you can, if you want to, progress on and do a degree or even a master's degree later, basically. Yeah. So it's got that kind of double value, where I think, like you say, certification, as we mentioned before, is very much a kind of industry specific thing. And I think that proving that or determining that it's academic value is a lot more kind of difficult, basically. And I know you used to do this, right? So when you first started with Kaplan, and because that was a conversion master's, right? You had this, didn't you, where people would come to you with kind of industry certifications or whatever, and you had to decide, was that enough for them
Exactly.
to
So
guide you?
it's to decide whether or not it was evidence of prior learning, that's what they call it in HE, to be able to say, right, okay, because you've done this ISC squared certification, it means you don't need to do this module on networking or whatever. But then again, it meant going into the certification, see what was covered, comparing it to what we're trying to deliver in the degree, even down to the assessments to see whether or not there was any comparability between them. And in some cases, it worked, and some it just did not compare at all. So it was a
And I
case
think
you got to carry on.
this goes back to what you were saying and what Catherine was saying. This idea of just because you might cover the same topics, you might cover them at a different level and in a different way, right?
Way.
Because, like you say, there's that kind of that creativity bit, which may not be requested on, I mean, I think Catherine mentioned Cisco before, right? So the Cisco qualification may require that you build a network and you can plug things in and configure the switch. But it may not require that, at certain levels anyway, it may not require that you know how to combine these things together to form a system or to solve a kind of specific problem, right?
Problem,
So that's
exactly.
the kind of synthesis and creativity bit that maybe, certainly on the lower levels, they might not get from just a kind of an industry certification, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So that was the mapping I had to do for all these things. I came into the point where we could easily say, right, even if you've got that, sorry, it doesn't give you any prior learning. You'd have to carry on with our modules as they are. But yeah, it's quite an interesting one though. That's why I've said I think education's still at the top, really, and that certification can just be added in.
You have anything else to add to that, Catherine, about the I mean, especially consider that you work with people in the network industry, like BT or whatever. Have you kind of seen maybe kind of where the certifications don't kind of meet the requirements of the company, basically?
Not really, but I think industry likes to be associated with higher education as well because higher education is respected. So I would say it gives you a good point to spring from being associated with the higher education.
I mean, I think certainly bigger companies, I think, like you say, the fact is that bigger companies, your multinationals or whatever, this is what I think Kepi was saying before. These are the people that want you to have a degree or maybe even a master's nowadays to kind of get a job there. Whereas, as I said, a lot of the smaller companies, which is a backbone of certainly the UK and Europe, they tend to prefer people with FE qualifications because they see them, rightly or wrongly, they see them as being kind of more focused on kind of practical hands-on skills than on there's all this thing, and I'm not sure how true it is. There's all this thing about kind of people with degrees having to be trained how to do the practical stuff, where I think the people with FE qualifications are seen as being more practical. Now, again, whether that's true or not is another matter entirely. But I think there's a kind of a feeling of that from industry, basically.
I think that's a baseline understanding, but like I said, that's why universities have cottoned on and don't start doing things like degree apprenticeships or trying to make sure that their degrees are a bit more practical in design and delivery.
Okay, well, thank you very much to my guests today, and obviously, hopefully, you all enjoyed out there listening to kind of this. And so this kind of wraps up kind of podcast one, but there will be another one. And we thank you for kind of subscribing to this and listening. Then please subscribe to our podcast feed so you can get the other ones as they release. So that'll be it. And I'd just like to say thank you from me, and thank you to and from and Kepi and Catherine as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks,
Okay. Thanks.
everyone.